Diary of M. Bamfield, month of whatever. Not just private, but confidential. No interfering busybodies to read this. If you are reading this and you are not F. Bamfield, then you are an interfering busybody. But hey, I suppose if I found somebody else's diary, I'd read it too. I don't know when I'll be writing this diary again, if ever, as I'm setting off on an expedition. I've had to take drastic measures. Trouble is, I can't tell anyone, as not only is it hush-hush, it is also very urgent, possibly even dangerous. I could tell Charlotte, but she's not here, and no one else would listen. I suppose the truth is that all my life, I've never been brave or done anything that people thought was good or special. But I'm going off to be brave now. It's a bit scary, but sometimes you have no choice, as people might be depending on you, and you are the only hope they have. So here I go then, for better or worse. I hope I get back to writing the entry in this diary someday. If this is Mum or Dad reading this, I love you both. Please look after Angus and stroke him till he purrs. Ferg. Chapter 13. Tins, tins, tins. Tins, tins, tins. All he could see were tins. They passed Fergal by regularly, rhythmically. Tins, tins, tins. It was like a dream. Lines of tins. They marched past like soldiers off to fight, gleaming and polished, bright in their armour, heading for battle, heading for war. Off they went towards the transport which would take them to where they had to go, to the front line. Tins, tins, nothing but tins. No bottles, no glasses, no plastic containers, no lidded jars, just tins. As they moved along, they rattled and clanged until finally they came to a halt. That was when Fergal had to play his part, to do his bit, in this world of tins. They were his masters. They had taken him over, and if he didn't do what he had to, they would soon be upon him, swarming all over him. The great tins. His limbs ached, but still the tins came. His eyes grew tired, his ears throbbed with the sound, but still they came. He slept, he woke, and there they were. There they always were. The unending precision of tins. It was like in the cartoon film Fantasia, the Sorcerer's Apprentice sequence, where the hapless apprentice commanded the broom to do the work, to bring in the buckets of water. But once started, he hadn't been able to stop it, and the broom turned to other brooms, all carrying even more buckets of water. And still the brooms and the water and the buckets just kept on coming. Just like the tins, 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 a great flood of tins. Fergal's head throbbed. His eyes were rimmed red with tiredness, but still they came. The tins rolled on, button bright, all standing to attention, trim and disciplined and marching in unison, all in rows, all the same distance apart. On they went, the great legions, the battalions, the foot soldiers, the ant like ants, like lemmings, like a blizzard of snowflakes, like a swarm of locusts, a plague of tins. He had disposed of one, but another was right behind it, or right beside it. There was nothing you could do. You could fight them, but you could never defeat them. This massive army of tins. 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 Sometimes Fergal really couldn't stand it anymore, and he let out a long shout of anger, rage and despair. For a split of a split second, they seemed to fall silent, but then the noise of the march resumed. On they came, clanking and clattering, metal and mechanical, unfeeling and uncaring, mindless, moronic, stupid, relentless, unending. Tins. Hello, Mrs. Bamfield. It took a moment before Charlotte realised that something was wrong. She could have telephoned first, but she felt that it would be better to go round in person. After all, she'd even brought a present. A tin, in a matter of fact, a foreign tin, with an interesting label. Is Fergal in? Charlotte had a lot to ask him to. If he'd had any luck while she had been away, whether he matched the codes up, and if not, how many of the supermarket aisles remained unchecked. She'd sent texts and emails while on holiday, asking for a progress report, but Fergal must have been too busy to reply. Fergal? Mrs. Bamfield looked ghastly, pale, ill. She seemed to have aged years in a matter of weeks. She looked as if she had been dealt some terrible blow. Perhaps some close friend or even a family friend had died. Yes, Fergal, is he in at the moment? It crossed Charlotte's mind that Mrs. Bamfield didn't actually recognise her. She was staring at her as though she simply didn't know who she was. I've got a present for him, Charlotte explained. I brought it back from holiday in France, Mrs. Bamfield. Are you all right? Charlotte realised now that Fergal's mother's eyes were red, puffy and swollen. She had been crying. And by the look of the dark rings underneath her bloodshot eyes, she hadn't been sleeping much either. Mrs. Banfield. Fergal's mother stood down the doorway of the house, neither inviting Charlotte in nor asking her to go. An awful, uncomfortable silence grew like some great festering weed. Mrs. Banfield, are you okay? Then she seemed to see her at last, to know who she was. Charlotte. Yes, Mrs. Banfield, it's me, Charlotte, the tin collector, Fergal's friend. Remember? We met in the supermarket when we were reaching for the same tin in the bargain basket. You do remember me, don't you, Mrs. Banfield? You just don't look very well. Mrs. Banfield's hand went to her sleeve. She pulled out a handkerchief and pressed it to one of her eyes. Oh, Charlotte, Charlotte, she began. Of course, you've been away, haven't you? You wouldn't know, would you? You wouldn't know. And you're his only friend, really. I mean, he's got other friends, but you seemed to understand, didn't you, my dear? A proper, true friend. Do come in for a moment, please. Charlotte nodded and followed her into the house. They sat in the quiet kitchen. The fridge murmured, the clock ticked. The place seemed unnaturally tidy. Mrs. Banfield was too preoccupied with whatever it was which had so upset her to even offer Charlotte so much as a glass of water, let alone some orange juice or a biscuit, as she would normally have done. What's happened, Mrs. Banfield? It's Fergal, isn't it? Yes, it is. It is. He's gone. Charlotte looked at her. She didn't immediately understand. Gone? You mean gone out? He'll be back later. No, no, Mrs. Banfield said. We don't know if he'll ever be back at all, but gone. Gone where? If only we knew, Mrs. Banfield said. But we've no idea. We've searched everywhere. The police, everyone, they've all searched everywhere. They're still searching now. Oh, they've been so kind, dear. Everyone's been so very kind, but they haven't found him. Not anywhere. Not any trace of him either. Nothing at all. But what happened? I mean, how? Where? When did he go missing? Last Saturday. Last Saturday? Yes, we went to the supermarket, same as usual, in the morning. Only this time... Yes? Well, this time, instead of my having to drag Fergal out of the place, he developed this new obsession, you see. Well, hobby, we'd have called it. It's because he's so clever, you know. At least, because he was so clever. Her hands began to tremble. What if I never see him again? Oh, Mrs. Banfield, you mustn't talk like that. I know, dear, I know I shouldn't, but it's been so long, a whole week, that I've started to think the worst. What if he's been abducted or had a terrible accident? If he's lying unconscious somewhere or alone and afraid or... Charlotte stared at her, full of questions, yet not knowing what to say. Seeing that Mrs. Banfield wasn't capable of offering her a glass of water, Charlotte fetched one for her instead. She wondered where Mr. Banfield was. He's out looking for him, Mrs. Banfield explained, seeming to guess her thoughts. He's out looking for Fergal every minute of the day. He says he'll find him. He says he won't stop until he does. But what if he doesn't? What if we never see Fergal again? If only he'd come back. If only he would. It wouldn't matter about him being a bit clumsy and awkward and having funny hobbies. He could have all the strange hobbies he wanted to. Not just 50 tins, but 100, 1,000. He could fill the whole house with tins, and with sacks of rubbish if he wanted to, or cardboard boxes or mouldy old newspapers, if only he'd come back. Mrs. Banfield went to the sink and took a sponge cloth. She began to wipe down the perfectly clean kitchen surfaces as if her life and sanity depended on it. We've had our ups and downs and our little arguments, the way all families do, she went on. But we got on so well, mostly. He'd never have run away deliberately, I know he wouldn't. And I don't think he was unhappy at school or being bullied or anything like that. If anything, he seemed happier recently, having found a friend like you, Charlotte, to share his interests. Charlotte fell out of her depth. Dealing with a woman whose son had gone missing wasn't a job for a child her age. Is there no one with you, Mrs. Banfield, to look after you? Oh, yes, dear. My sister's here. She's just popped out to the chemist for me. She'll be back in a moment. Go on with what you were telling me about Fergal. Mrs. Banfield stood wringing the sponge cloth in her hands. Then she resumed her narrative. It was last Saturday, as I said. Fergal had got to be very difficult about leaving the supermarket. He'd become obsessed with looking at all the tins, with turning them over and looking at the bottom of them and checking whatever was on there. Codes or something, I suppose. Have you any idea why he'd want to do that, Charlotte? Charlotte did, but she didn't want to say. at least not until she had heard Mrs. Bamfield's story in full. So she just mumbled, "Maybe," and let Mrs. Bamfield continue. But not only had he taken up collecting tin numbers, or whatever he was doing it, he also had to do it in a very methodical way. He had to do all the tins, one aisle at a time, and he seemed to have to check one of every brand and of each variety. If he thought he'd missed one out, he'd go back and start again. It was most infuriating, to be honest. I'd be there with a heaped up trolley waiting for him at the checkout, only he wouldn't appear, and I'd have to go searching for him all over the crowded supermarket. By the time I found him, the queues at the checkouts would be enormous and, well, it was most frustrating anyway, I can tell you that. So last week, Charlotte said, trying tactfully to bring Mrs. Bamfield back to the point. Yes, anyway, last week it was all different. Different in what way? Last week he couldn't wait to leave. Oh, really? Yes, it was all very strange. We'd only been there a few minutes. Well, 10 or 15. Anyway, and I was pushing the trolley along by the cheese counter, wondering if we should have some Stilton or whether we ought to stick to the Edam, which maybe isn't quite so rich. Mr. Bamfield is very fond of the Stilton himself, and I'm sure it's all right in moderation, but it can't be good for the heart, not in the quantity he eats it, as it's so high in fat and... So you will buy the cheese, Mrs. Bamfield. Sorry, Charlotte's patience was at breaking point. Cheese, you were saying about Fergal. You will buy the cheese when suddenly... You were about to tell me something about Fergal. Was I? Oh, yes, yes I was. Charlotte looked up at the kitchen clock. She wondered how long it might be before Mrs. Bamfield's sister got back. Mrs. Bamfield forgot the cheese diversion and got back to the point. Yes, I was by the cheese counter. To be honest, I'd hardly even begun to do my shopping because I like to take my time to choose and to sort of plan out a menu for each day of the week, you see. So I'd barely started, as I say, and only had half a dozen items in the trolley, when Fergal suddenly appeared around the aisle, travelling at about 150 miles an hour, and looking very excited about something. Excited? Did he say why? About what? Mrs. Bamfield sighed sadly. No, dear, he didn't. But he was excited. He had that look in his eye. The bargain hunter's look, I call it. It's that look people get when they've been keeping an eye out for something special for a long time, and suddenly they found it. I get that feeling myself sometimes, in the January sales. The code, Charlotte thought. He must have found the code. He must have found the code on a labelled tin. He must have discovered where the strange tins were coming from. And there the manufacturer's name would be, on the label of the tin he had found. A name, and probably an address too. That must have been it. That must have been why he was so excited. He had matched the code. Did he say what he was excited about, Mrs. Bamfield? No, he didn't. In fact, he wouldn't even admit that he was excited. But he was suddenly in a desperate hurry to get out of the supermarket, quite unlike his usual self, when I practically had to drag him out kicking and screaming. But no, this time he couldn't get me out of the place fast enough. He followed me round every inch of the way, negging all the time, saying, "Come on, Mum," and "Mum, do get a move on," and throwing any old thing in the trolley just to get me to the till. I see. And when we got to the pizza's cabinet, instead of having our usual debates like we used to in the old days when I'd say, "Which one shall we get, Fergal? Shall we have the margarita or shall we have the pepperoni?" And he'd say, "Can't we have the four cheeses for a change?" And I'd say, "We had that 2 weeks ago. How about having the spinach?" And he'd say, "I don't like spinach. What about the mushroom?" And I'd say, "I thought you didn't like mushroom either." And then he'd say... Charlotte listened with increasing amazement as Mrs. Bamfield prattled on about pizzas. Her distress at Fergal's disappearance seemed to have made her gormless and unhinged. It was as though if she went on talking about pizzas and cheese counters, she wouldn't have to think about Fergal, where he might be and what had happened to him. So he was in a hurry to leave the supermarket. Mrs. Bamfield looked at Charlotte as though she had forgotten she was there. In a hurry? Oh, yes, yes, he just wanted to go. Where did he want to go? Well, just go. I see, and I don't suppose you know which aisle he came from, Mrs. Bamfield. Aisle? When he arrived all excited and anxious to leave, which aisle he had been in? Mrs. Bamfield shook her head. I wouldn't know, dear. I wouldn't know. Why? Would it matter? It was Charlotte's turn to shake her head. Probably not, she said. Not really. So what happened then? Well, I had to put my foot down and insist that we took our time and did our shopping properly. Because you can't hurry good cooking and you can't hurry good shopping either. If you do, you just end up going home with a load of things you didn't want and none of the things you really needed. But finally you left. Yes, finally we did. We loaded up the car and drove home. But even as we drove along, Fergal kept saying things like, "Put your foot down, Mum," and "Go faster," and "There's a gap there," and "No need to stop, the light's not quite red yet," which was very unlike him too. And then, well, then we got home. He helped me to carry the shopping in and to unpack it. He seemed to have calmed down a bit by then, or maybe he was only pretending that he had, in order to get round me. Get round you? Yes, because as soon as we put the shopping away, he asked me if he could go out. Go out? Yes, on his own too. His own? Yes. Where did he want to go to? That was what I asked him. And what did he say? Just out. Just out? Yes. What did you say? No, of course. I said that simply wasn't good enough. If he wanted to go out, he would have to tell me exactly where he was going. And even then, you weren't very happy about it. No, Charlotte, I was not. And I don't suppose your mother would have been either. I mean, she's obviously let you walk here on your own, but only because it isn't far away and it's broad daylight and it's a respectable neighbourhood. Though trouble could happen anywhere and bad things can happen to good people. And that's the truth. But she's only let you do it because she feels it's safe. She's probably worrying about you right now, and if you're here much longer, I wouldn't be surprised to hear the phone ring. And it'll probably be her asking how you are. Charlotte nodded. Yes, she said. She insisted I take my mobile so that she could get in touch. Exactly, Charlotte, Mrs. Banfield said. Then her eyes clouded over. The thing is, you and Fergal, you're getting older and growing up, and you need your freedom and your independence. You have to be allowed out on your own sooner or later. Nobody can be kept in and treated like a baby forever. It's just a matter of striking a balance, that's all. So, you let Fergal go? Yes. Well, first you have to tell me where he was going. Where was he going? Where did he say he was going? To the library and then to the square. He said that some of his schoolmates would be there. They'd congregate there with their skateboards on a Saturday afternoon and practice their manoeuvres or whatever they call them and frighten people, especially ones with pushchairs as they zoom by. Fergal doesn't have a skateboard, just rollerblades, and he didn't even take those as he's not very good on them, but he said he would go down and watch. I even checked with his father to see what he thought. He doesn't like me ringing him on the golf course as he's often in the middle of a complicated shot, and if his mobile goes off, he might get distracted and miss it. He won't turn it off, though, in case the message is important. So I rang him, and he felt that Fergal would be all right, and so did I. So I let him go. Mrs. Banfield paused and reached for her handkerchief. I let him go. Why did I let him go, Charlotte? Why did I let him go? If I hadn't, he'd still be here. He'd be here now. He'd still be with us, and things would be as they've always been. Fergal with his tins and his other hobbies, and life going on, and his dad playing golf or going to the football. And all the things I thought were important, all the things I thought mattered, manners and tidiness and all the rest, you know, they don't matter at all, Charlotte. Not really. People or all that matter. And I wouldn't care if Fergal ate with his elbows on the table forever and ever, if only I could have him back. A great sob racked Miss Banfield, and she buried her face in her arms. Charlotte went and fetched her some kitchen roll. She took it and dried her eyes with it and blew her nose. Just then was the sound of the front door opening and a voice calling, "Only me!" A woman entered the kitchen. It had to be Mrs. Banfield's sister, and she carried a small pharmacist bag in her hand. Charlotte decided that it was time for her to go. She stood up as Fergal's aunt came in. "Oh, hello, you got a visitor." "This is a friend of Fergal's, Veronica." Charlotte, she'd been away on holiday. She didn't know that he had disappeared. "Ah, I see. Hello, Charlotte." "Hello. Actually, I probably ought to be going." "Okay, thanks for coming anyway. I'll look after her now." Charlotte said goodbye to Mrs. Banfield and said that she hoped Ferg would be found very soon, and she headed for the door. She closed it quietly behind her and walked down the path. When she got to the gate, she heard the ringtone of a mobile phone. It was her own. It was her mother calling to see if she was all right and to ask her where she was. It was nice to have someone to worry about you. Irritating and annoying some of the time, but nice too. Fergal walked home. Charlotte walked home briskly, without even thinking of where she was going. She had to tell somebody now, a grown-up, an adult. She had to tell them all about everything. The tins, the finger, the ring, the severed ear, the gold stud, the note. As soon as she got home, she'd tell someone. She'd tell her dad. Or maybe her mum. Or both of them together. Or maybe go to the police. But she had to tell someone. She was out of her depth now. It was all way over her head. It was deep, deep water. Deep enough to drown him. Fergal had found a matching code. He must have done. He had discovered the name and the whereabouts of the factory, the place where all the strange tins had come from. And he had foolishly gone off to find it, all on his own, without telling anyone where he was going. He had gone off to the rescue, believing that it couldn't possibly wait a second longer. And now, well, now what? Well, there was but one possibility, wasn't there? Whatever had happened to the person who had written the note asking for help, whatever terrible thing had happened to them, had now happened to Fergal too. Now he needed help as well, and she was the only one who couldn't help him. But who would believe her? She could just imagine her own mother's voice full of disapproval and incredulity. Tins, Charlotte, really, what an idea, really, how could you? There poor Mr. and Mrs. Banfield are, absolutely distraught having lost their son Fergal, and all you can do to help is to come up with preposterous stories about tins. Honestly, Charlotte, it really isn't good enough. Now go to your room and stay there and think about what you've said, and don't come down until you're ready to say you're sorry and to apologise for telling lies. There's a time and a place for an imagination, and this isn't it. It really isn't appropriate, Charlotte. I thought that we'd brought you up better than this, and we even brought you that new mobile phone as well, and this is how you repay us, by carrying on like this. Her ears were ringing with reproaches before she had even spoken a word. No, the truth wouldn't be enough, not without evidence. But then her heart skipped. She felt lighter, suddenly happier. She had the evidence, of course. As soon as they saw it, they'd believe her. Maybe her story on its own wouldn't convince them, but the severed finger and the cut-off ear would. They were at home, lying in the bottom of the deep freeze, hidden under all the other things, well wrapped up so no one could see what was inside without undoing all the wrapping. She hurried on home. As soon as she got she headed for the utility room, where the deep freeze was. She went straight to it and opened the door to get the evidence. Only, the freezer was empty. Totally empty. There was absolutely nothing in there. Every single thing had gone.